And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined, as always, by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. Stu, before we start the show, we wanted to let our listeners know about The Athletic's Black Friday deal, which means starting Monday night at 5 p.m. Eastern, The Athletic's great writing, all of it, is just $1 a month for 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/theaudible. to lock in our very best price of the year, just $1 a month for new subscribers. It's the best deal going. Everybody knows how good The Athletic is. I'm not just saying this in terms of our college football stuff. Everything. You can get it. Do it. Our Black Friday deal is ramping up very soon.
Perfect timing, Bruce. It's perfect timing for the Black Friday sale because it's right on. They're going to be right on the brink of the playoff coming into focus. Coaching carousel probably right after Thanksgiving will go crazy. So yeah, $1 a month.
Stu, as we're doing this over Zoom, I see you're in your posh hotel suite somewhere in the 614. You've had some good luck at games, meaning when you go to games, they've been very compelling. This one, not so much.
Not this
one,
no.
No, you went to Michigan State, Ohio State, and by the time I imagine you got settled in your seat, it was already probably 14 to nothing.
I guess you got to pay the price at some point, right? I mean, it was couldn't have been more opposite of when I went down to the field at the end of the Ohio State-Oregon game 2 months ago, and the place was going crazy and 100,000 people screaming. And is Ohio State going to be able to come back and take Oregon to overtime, which they did not. And then by the time I got down the field yesterday, the place was already half empty. It felt like you were at a spring game. Everybody's just kind of waiting for it to end. I don't have some database of every game I've ever covered, but I can't imagine I've ever covered a game. I'm almost positive I've never covered a game that was 49-0 at halftime. Much less a game between number 4 and number 7. It was just Ohio State put on a clinic, especially a passing clinic where CJ Stroud pitched the equivalent of a perfect game. His receivers were running wide open the whole game, certainly the whole half before they got taken out. And Kenneth Walker, poor Kenneth Walker, the Heisman front runner going into the game, probably has zero chance now. He barely even got to touch the ball because they were behind so quickly.
I want to ask you, so obviously Michigan State has had a really good year. I think Mel Tucker has done a really good job, and obviously Kenneth Walker's been fantastic. Their pass defense, especially in the last three games, they gave up like 1,300 yards, and that was going into facing CJ Stroud and the best group of receivers in the country. So it was kind of a recipe for disaster. Before we got it, like, I do want to ask this because I feel like we talked a little decent amount about Ohio State and how dangerous they are and how they could be a bad matchup for Georgia. Honestly, they're a bad matchup for almost anybody. Let's look at this now in the context of it was a fairly eventful day amid a bunch of blowouts in terms of what we think we're going to get from the CFP. I mean, you saw them in person. I've seen them in person. I saw them a couple of weeks back. It's so good on offense, very well coached, very talented. Where would you like, Oregon has basically taken themselves out by getting whooped by Utah. So now that head to head stuff, we can put that to bed. I feel like, so now what do we think where Ohio State should be clear number two right now, get Alabama out of there. They've scuffled. They had their hands full with Arkansas last night. They had their hands full with LSU and Florida. Those are not those are not great wins. And their only really good win this year is against Ole Miss. And to me, Ohio State is sitting there. They're clear number two.
I mean, I think I should throw it back to you because it was only a few days ago on the Wednesday podcast that a listener asked why you've been so down on Ohio State. When are you ever going to get be sold on Ohio State? Are you sold now is what you're saying?
Did you not listen to the podcast the other day? Did you not listen when I said, check with me back on
check with me on Saturday. Yep.
Yeah. Now what I thought it would be like Saturday at 5 o'clock Eastern. I didn't think it would be Saturday at like 12:22 Eastern, but yes, I am sold.
The way I look at it, you know, what I wrote from the game is I feel like the last 2 months or so, everybody has looked at the landscape as Georgia and then a step down or even two steps down to everybody else. Everybody else is flawed. And at the end of the day, I think now there's two. I think Georgia and Ohio State are both in that elite tier. And that offense, as you said, I mean, I feel like they've assembled, like if you were doing a fantasy draft and you were like, okay, if this fantasy draft goes well, I hope I'll get one of Chris Olave or the other, you know, their other two great receivers, or maybe I'll get one of them, but I won't be able to get Travion Henderson. They got them all. And I don't know. We've seen them. We have seen defenses like Nebraska's for one, slow them down a bit. But at the end of the day, even a great defense like Georgia is not going to hold them to 10 points. So, and then of course that, you know, you in particular kept wondering about their defense. Is their defense really that improved? They took the Heisman Trophy winner or front runner completely out of the game. Peyton Thorne's a pretty good quarterback who had no chance against that defense. You know, I feel like they've rounded into, and this is what happens, right? And this is why, frankly, I was uncomfortable with the Oregon-Ohio State head-to-head, even because I know some people might say, well, this is easy to say in hindsight, but it was so clear that they were going in opposite directions and that result from 2 months ago wasn't necessarily indicative of where those teams were now. And Ohio State has rounded into elite status. And then you brought up Alabama. So I cover the game. I write my column and I'm driving back to the hotel. And at that point I've got Alabama, Arkansas I've got the CBS pulled up on my phone, but I'm listening. I'm not watching while I drive. I'm not that reckless. And I'm hearing, you know, Brad Nessler gets very excited after and I keep hearing another big play for Arkansas, KJ Jefferson to touchdown. And then the fake field goal. And it's just like, I know Alabama's always going to get the benefit of the doubt because they're Alabama, but at one point do we stop and say, I don't think this is that great an Alabama team. If they didn't have Bryce Young, who was phenomenal yesterday, they might be 7-4 right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that. I mean, it's weird to, it's weird to say if they didn't have, if they didn't have Guy is a great quarterback, because I feel like great quarterbacks can mask so much. But the crazy thing with them is, you know, I obviously we knew about Evan Neal up front. You know, Brian Robinson Jr. is a really talented running back. Even still in this game, you know, 36 carries, 112 yards. That's not awful, but that's not very good. They did not have a run. Brian Robinson Jr.'s longest run was 15 yards. And to give up almost 500 yards to Arkansas, man, they're like, it's not, to me, it's a bunch of things. It's their defense is pretty suspect. Their run game is surprisingly shaky. And those are two things you really don't expect from a Nick Saban team. So let's take a step back, because in your native state, Cincinnati, people had been on them about not looking impressive. They beat the heck out of SMU. And I feel like, maybe I'm wrong here, obviously there could be upsets for the last couple of weeks of the season, but Cincinnati, to me, if I was a Cincinnati fan, I would feel pretty good about my chances to make the four right now, because, and let me walk this through, because I'll be honest, I did not get a chance to see that much football on my TV last night, because I was at my game, we'll get to that a little later, was a 1 o'clock Pacific kickoff, so I barely got to see the game you were at, and really didn't get to see much till late at night. So here's what I'm looking at. So obviously Georgia, assuming they win out, but even if, you know, I don't know if Alabama picked them off, Georgia's still in. right? So we think Ohio State, unless Michigan gets them or they get upset in the Big Ten title game, they're in. So that's two. Nobody is going to be there from the ACC. Nobody now is going to be there from the Pac-12. The Big 12, maybe Oklahoma State or Oklahoma can win the last, you know, win the Bedlam Big 12 double. But even still, that would only be three. And then you got Cincinnati sitting there. I don't see how Notre Dame could leapfrog them. It's not like that, you know, Georgia Tech is really bad and, you know, their last game is not going to do much. So all of a sudden, Cincinnati, just win and you're in, right? Am I doing that right?
I wouldn't quite go there yet, but... Well,
explain to me.
Yeah, I'll explain. So
Alabama beating Georgia would do it?
Well, of course, Alabama beating Georgia would be a problem for them. But even if that doesn't happen, I mean, first of all, I do think if Oklahoma State, who the most underrated or most overlooked really good team I've seen in a long time, they late into the game yesterday, I think with maybe a few minutes left against Texas Tech, they pitched a shutout and Texas Tech had less than 100 yards of offense until like the final couple plays. By the way, Oklahoma State's become the Tim Brando special. I feel like he calls every one of their games and nobody watches them. So they have no idea how good Oklahoma State is. But the committee respects them. They're already, what, ninth as of last week? And
Do you think Oklahoma State were to beat Oklahoma twice and go 12?
Well, if they beat Oklahoma, then they're going to play Baylor in the Big 12
championship. I'm sorry. Okay. So if they beat Oklahoma and then they would have to beat Baylor
twice. I think they would be in. I think they would move ahead of Cincinnati because they'd be a 12-1.
Ahead of a 13-0 Cincinnati that beat Notre Dame, which honestly, Notre Dame.
Yeah. I just think a 12-1 Power 5 champ is always going to get taken ahead of undefeated group of five. We've seen that in the past. And especially because if they do win those two games, they're going to have three top 25 wins. Cincinnati at most is going to have two. So no, but at that point, right, you're saying, okay, fine. Georgia gets one, Ohio State gets one, Oklahoma State gets one. And by the way, I don't know if that applies to Oklahoma. The committee's pretty down on them. I don't know if beating Oklahoma State twice would, I don't know if they'd view them quite the same way. I think Oklahoma State has that defense to brag about, and they don't have a, you know, their one loss was
Baylor.
Baylor. So no, Iowa State, who was not.
No, Baylor. Oklahoma's one loss was at Baylor.
No, I'm talking about Oklahoma State.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was at Iowa State 24-20.
It was at Iowa State. It was a 3-point game. Like to me, their resume is pretty solid. They don't have all the crazy close calls. And
they actually do have a lot of close calls. I'm going to read to you and this is not to disparage Oklahoma State, but just this is how close it's been. The first game of the year, they beat Missouri State 23.
Well, before you go on with this, they have gotten a lot better. They had some rough performances the first month.
Yeah, this is, I think, why a lot of people probably haven't read too much into it. The first week of the season, barely beat Missouri State, beat them by 7. Beat Tulsa by 5. Beat one at Boise by 1. Really questionable call in that game. I know we talk about some of that sometimes. Lost by only 3 at Iowa State. And then they've gotten rolling. And it's like Kansas whipped West Virginia on the road, blew out TCU, shut out Texas Tech, and now they have Bedlam. Bedlam, man. You know, I've did that game a couple of years. This would be a fun game to be at.
And look, Mike Gundy is 2-14 all time against Oklahoma. So if you're somebody who's like, yeah, you tell me all you want about Oklahoma State, they always lose to Oklahoma, I totally get that. But they are the better team. Whether they'll actually pull it off or not, I mean, it is in Stillwater, that helps. But I think they're the better team. And I think, again, all I'm saying is I think they would get in over Cincinnati. And then the fourth one, though, would be Cincinnati, undefeated Cincinnati, or 2-loss Alabama. And for weeks, I've been thinking, yeah, they'll still take 2-loss Alabama because they will just point to Cincinnati. They default to Alabama, and they, at the end of the day, Cincinnati will not have their schedule strength. But after yesterday, I'm like, at some point, you got to watch the games. And I mean, Alabama made Zach Calzada look like Johnny Manziel. KJ Jefferson is a good quarterback. I wouldn't necessarily say an elite quarterback. He went off on them yesterday. They almost lost to Florida, who's turned out to be a dumpster fire. But even if you look at they play a tougher schedule. I know that the SEC fans are gonna be like, if Cincinnati was in the SEC, they'd be 7-4. Don't know. No way to prove that. But Cincinnati's going to finish with the better win. You know, Notre, they're going to have a win over 11-1 Notre Dame. Notre Dame. The best win for Alabama is that Ole Miss win. And they might even end up with the same number of top 25 wins if they beat Houston and Houston stays in the top 25. Because Auburn's out. You know, their top Alabama's top 25 wins at this point are going to be Ole Miss. If Arkansas stays in, I guess they would be one. If Mississippi State hangs around, like, it's unclear to me if it's, they're going to have, I think they're both going to end up with two top 25 wins. And at that point, it's like, okay, what possible justification do you have to leave out the undefeated team for the two loss team?
Question for you on this too.
Yeah.
I should know the answer to this, but I'll be honest. I don't. If Oklahoma wins Bedlam, they would play Baylor.
No, Oklahoma State's already clinched.
So
they would play them again.
My point is Oklahoma does not have a chance to avenge their only loss.
No. And because they lost to Baylor, their best, like, they, even as we go into Thanksgiving weekend, Oklahoma still does not have a top 25 win. So they would get two over the last 2 weeks against the same team. Do you see why I'm not loving their chances?
Yeah, I think what, you know, it's interesting in this regard, like, I think they may end up getting, like, they beat K-State. K-State has a chance. I assume they're going to beat Texas. That's maybe too big of an assumption. K-State would go to 8-4. They might get in the top 25 then.
Timeout. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't follow. Got it.
Yeah. It's not like a resounding win. They might get in the top 25. I'm just thinking. I don't know. There's a lot of minutia in this.
Well, so, but look, Cincinnati is in a lot better shape now that Oregon lost. And I think it'll be interesting. I assume they'll be number four Tuesday night. Some people speculated Michigan might jump them. I don't think that's going to happen given Cincinnati just, you know, blew out a pretty good SMU team. Michigan blew out a very mediocre Maryland team.
Here's another scenario.
And it's irrelevant, right? Because either, okay, go ahead.
This is something that, I mean, honestly, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's just like, you know, we're talking about Bedlam, how lopsided that has been. Here's something that also could bode well for Cincinnati. I think Michigan beats Ohio State at home this weekend to go to 11-1. Michigan plays for the Big 12 title. I assume it's Wisconsin, or is it Wisconsin or Iowa? Wisconsin. They would play them. Obviously, they blew out Wisconsin at Wisconsin earlier in the year, but somehow they lose to them, which is possible. You know, you got to play a team twice. So then Wisconsin is sitting there. You have basically four two-loss teams in the Big Ten: Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan. Wisconsin's the Big 12 champ with a two-loss team. And then, you know, what do you do at that point? I mean, I don't think a two-loss Big Ten team would go over Cincinnati.
I think so. Although, would they maybe still prefer two-loss Ohio State? Who, I don't know. We're getting, now it gets really convoluted. I think at the end of the day,
I don't think they'd prefer two-loss anybody with your 10-2. They might prefer two-loss Wisconsin at 11-2 because at least you have an 11-win.
Wisconsin has three losses already, though. So,
no, you're right. You're right.
The biggest thing Cincinnati needs to have happen is for Georgia to beat Alabama, because if Alabama wins, both those teams are definitely getting in. And I got to tell you, I know a lot of people just refuse to buy in on Georgia. I think because Stetson Bennett's their quarterback and Alabama will beat them again. I don't see that game being as of this moment, I don't know how competitive it'll be because of everything you said earlier. If you can't run the ball and your secondary is not that great, that's not a recipe to beat the number one team in the country that's been so dominant all year. I think Ohio State could give Georgia a game and possibly beat them if they get to that point. That would be, if I'm Georgia, I'd be, you know, more worried about that matchup than the Alabama matchup, though obviously Alabama's beaten them so many times in big games recently. You're certainly not going to overlook them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Let's talk about what happened to Oregon. I thought Utah was going to win the game. I did not think Utah was going to annihilate them like that.
What? I mean, I thought they would win too. Now, I think one of the challenges, this game was 14-0 with about 3 minutes left in the second quarter. And it just felt like Oregon was teetering on getting smashed. But it just happened so fast. And all of a sudden, it just doesn't feel like this Oregon team is a very good play from behind team, you know?
And,
it just,
and once Britton Covey returned that punt, that was, it was all she wrote.
Yeah. I mean, look, Oregon, you know, I don't want to use this analogy because I've used it before with Florida State and Jameis, but Oregon sputtered a bunch of times. Like, I mean, they at one point had their hands full with Arizona. They obviously lost to a horrible Stanford team. I know Joe Moorhead was not available in that game, their play caller. You know, they had their hands full with Cal, barely beat UCLA. I mean, it's been a lot of close calls for a team that was number three in the country, you know. And I think what, you know, jumps out at me looking back at that game, because obviously I think Utah, I mean, look, these two teams are fairly similar in their DNA. Utah, 208 yards rushing. Oregon, 63. And I get it. Once it becomes a blowout in the second half, that's what's going to happen. But I just thought you saw a team that is playing with a lot more momentum. They're in their home environment. And it just feels like that, again, I give you credit because I'm pretty sure, at least I think you did. I thought you picked Utah to win the Pac-12 South when a lot of other people were like, I don't know what to do with Utah. You know, I know they have Brent
Keith. Back when people still thought USC might win the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, we can talk about USC
or ASU
a little more in depth in a minute. But look, Cameron Rising has played well. Utah, by the way, this is a pretty eye-opening stat to me. On third downs last night, 11 for 14. That's almost impossible to do in a college football game, I feel like, to have that kind of efficiency on third down. I mean, you do that, you're going to pretty much win every game, especially if you have zero turnovers, and that's what they had.
Utah's a really good team. They dug themselves a hole early in the season. First of all, they were starting the wrong quarterback, and I was totally wrong on that. I thought Charlie Brewer was an excellent, you know, transfer portal pickup.
You
for
listen
them
to Max too much, probably.
4-year starter, yeah, maybe. And they, you know, they out of the gate, they lose to BYU, they lose to San Diego State, and any, you know, you're wondering if they're even gonna, I don't know, go to a bowl game. Then they have an awful tragedy. Aaron Lowe is killed, and the season could have gone any direction from there, but it went in a very positive direction. Cam Rising, established himself as the quarterback. They did have that one weird blowout loss in the middle of the season to Oregon State, but Oregon State's pretty good. But other than that, yeah, they've been just trucking people. That being said, like Oregon is, if Oregon beats Oregon State this week, they're going to get a chance, another chance at Utah, another chance to avenge it. And that wouldn't completely surprise me. But at the end of the day, if you're an Oregon fan, how are you feeling right now about your season? I mean, I don't think anybody thought it was a given they would go to the playoff even after they beat Ohio State. But this is now year four for Mario Cristobal. We know what an elite level he's recruited at. And yet, you know, you're out of the playoff race again, just like 2 years ago when they lost to ASU. Now that team turned around and actually crushed Utah's playoff chances in the Pac-12 title game and then won the Rose Bowl. So that ended up being a really good season. And I think if they do that this year, it'll still be seen as a really good season, but also a little bit of like, okay, are we, when are we going to turn that, when are we going to take that next step? We're talented enough to beat Ohio State. And yet they've just been very inconsistent. I know losing CJ Verdell was obviously a huge blow, probably has kept them from being the power running team they want to be. But yeah, I mean, they were carrying the Pac-12 banner. They were the Pac-12's last hope to end that playoff drought. Hard to believe they've now gone, that league has now gone 5 seasons in a row without a playoff team.
And yet it's not that hard to believe. So this is where I'm going to jump in on my game yesterday. So my crew was doing UCLA at USC. On Friday, we have our production meetings, and my colleague Brock Heward and I were fortunate enough to sit in on Graham Harrell's quarterback meeting to get ready for the game. And so while Brock and I were hanging out, just kind of waiting for the meeting to start, you're just sitting, you know, in the football facility, kind of watching the players go by. And it's not like you're at practice where everybody's in pads. You're just kind of looking guys at, you know, in sweatshirts and shorts walking around. And I was like, man, this does not look like any USC team that I can ever remember. And I've lived out here for close to 20 years. It looked like, honestly, if you told me this is Colorado or this is, I don't want to say Arizona. Washington's a big team. It looked like if you said it was Colorado or if you said it was
Cal, who had
a great
win against Stanford yesterday. So I don't want to disparage Cal.
A very average Pac-12 team. And I was like, man, this is like, and when you start getting into it, their defense is really, really average, especially on the back seven, in terms of like, I don't know how many guys in that roster are potential draft pick guys. You know, they have Thule, their defensive lineman's a good player. Drake Jackson's a good pass rusher, and Drake Jackson hurt his calf on Wednesday and was like basically just a situational pass rusher yesterday. The secondary is pretty dreadful. And going into that game, I was like, man, this could be a wild shootout because UCLA is going to score a lot of points on them. The question is Jackson Dart, who's very accurate, and there's a lot of attributes. They feel like he's an it factor quarterback. But man, I was not surprised to see UCLA put up a ton of points on them. And I got to say, I don't know how much you got to see, but like this was the whole DTR experience. He throws two picks early. One of them I don't necessarily think was on him, but then he scores 6 touchdowns, including at one point late in the first half, he scores a touchdown and ends up somebody hands him something and asks for his autograph right after the play. So he gets a 15-yard penalty for that. And then later in the game, he has probably the most impressive, like guys now a lot in games at all levels of football try to hurdle tacklers. This is probably the most impressive, like hurdle on the fly, like Edwin Moses, I'm not losing speed, I'm going over. And it was a pretty remarkable highlight. And, you know, he is like an interesting subject in this regard. Like, I think in part because he's always been known as DTR, and there is something where I think he's matured quite a bit in his time there, but the people inside of that program really rave about him. And Kyle Phillips, who's their kind of best receiver and is a really good player, he told me during the week, he was like, you know, this guy's like 100% been mischaracterized. I mean, he's the most selfless guy you could have. Puts everybody else in front of him. You know, Chip Kelly kind of always talks about how tough he is. And it was cool to see that kid in that game. Obviously, it wasn't like a hot, you know, USC's really struggling. It wasn't like this was a Pete Carroll team they beat, but still to see him kind of have that moment, you know, given that he has been at times picked apart and dissected in the LA market and a lot of it, I think was, he's a very visible person. I thought it was cool to see him have such a spectacular performance on that kind of stage.
I watched, I would say, most of the second half of your game, or at least was flipping between that and the Alabama game. And USC just looked like they had no interest in being there. I feel like the notion back in, you know, when they fired Clay Helton, that it might actually help them have a better season, just gone in the complete opposite direction. They're totally lost and disinterested. But you're also saying, and I think with a program like, I think it's the case with Texas too, people default to, well, there's talent there. You know, they just haven't had the right coach. There's talent there. From what you're describing, whoever they get as the new coach is going to have his hands full. It's not going to be, okay, we've got a real coach now. We're going to win 10 games next year.
There isn't that level. Like Antonio Morales and I did that story, and part of it after Clay Helton was fired was about how the recruiting rankings in the case of USC, and I think I would agree to this with Texas, were overinflated, maybe because these guys were chasing stars, or maybe because sometimes these guys got their stars bumped up because they were going to go to USC. It is not that way. I mean, I know enough NFL scouts who were in the building yesterday. That is not a top 10 talented team. I don't care what the stars from high school say. That's just not the reality. And you just see it. Now, it makes it worse that like the one guy they have who's a real difference maker was on crutches hobbling around. That's Drake London. But, you know, and there are some pretty good players and some pretty good young players. But this is so like, whoever gets this job, I don't want to say it's going to be a massive rebuild, but they are not anywhere close to a playoff team roster-wise. Their lines are not very good, and I think it's kind of caught up to them. And I think it's unfortunate for them just from knowing a lot of guys on staff. I think there's a lot of guys, it's just been so fragmented from the top with the leadership that whoever was going to take over as the interim, I just think had his hands full in that, because it's just been, you know, it's a complete mess right now. It's not to say that they can't make a really good hire, and I don't know how many of these guys, if any, they would keep, but there's going to be a lot of work to do just because it didn't fall apart overnight. But I think the biggest takeaway for me was this is what happens when you have a lame duck head coach who's been on the hot seat for 3 years and how hard it is to recruit. Like that class that was like ranked 62nd or whatever it was, like those are guys that you would need to be on the lines, because that was a heavy offensive defensive line group, and it just hasn't done much. I mean, so, and maybe some of these guys will turn out better over the next year or two, but I just think it's just, they are really, really lacking right now.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply. And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Okay, folks, I think we just had a first in podcast history. As Bruce was talking about USC just there, Matt Zenitz from on3.com reported that Florida has parted ways with Dan Mullen. And then I got to sit here and watch Bruce confirm it. I say listen to Bruce confirm it. The little bloop sound that a text message makes, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Okay, confirmed. So there we have it. I don't think this is a surprise that it happened. Maybe the timing a little bit. But man, last night when I was going to bring it up anyway, but just the final straw of a disastrous season, Florida losing in overtime to Missouri. Missouri went for two and got it. And you don't see this very often. A head coach come into the post-game press conference and just brazenly troll the other guy, Eli Drinkwitz. And Did you even remember that the Dan Mullen Darth Vader thing was after a Missouri game last year?
I didn't, I'll be honest. So this morning, my kid has a soccer game. We're walking back. Andy Staples, who's obviously, you know, knows Florida in and out and is based there, called me and I asked him about that. And he said, well, like he brought up that there was, I guess, almost a fight and a scuffle in that game earlier. And I don't think Eli Drinkwitz was happy with how Dan Mullen handled it either. And I was like, I don't even remember that. I do remember Dan Mullen and you and his staff almost getting into it with Derek Mason and the Vandy staff
a couple years ago.
I remember this. I didn't remember. And I didn't, it was surprising because I didn't think that was in character with Drinkwitz necessarily.
Yeah. It just shows you how, when things are going well, like when Mullen did that last year, it was kind of goofy, but I didn't really think much of it. It was Halloween. The game was on Halloween. He came in a Halloween costume, came in a Darth Vader costume. It didn't occur to me that would offend somebody or make somebody mad. It clearly did, because the lengths Drinkwitz went to, he has a toy lightsaber like sitting there under the lectern ready to pull out at the end, puts the hoodie over his head, says, "May the force be with you." If you watch the video of it, you will hear an audible gasp. I don't know if it's from one of the reporters or somebody else. It's just like, whoa, he went there. I don't think that's the reason Dan Mullen got fired, but it was like, that'll end up being the last image of the Dan Mullen era.
That's the equivalent of the tarmac for Dan Mullen.
That's the Dan Mullen. He got lightsabered. just crazy what happened to go from that Florida Alabama game in week three. Florida almost won that game. They were, 2-point conversion away from going to overtime. Then they crushed Tennessee the next week. It seemed like all is well and dandy in Gainesville. And then it just went completely off the rails. And Scott Strickland didn't have a choice at this point. And they are playing Florida State this week. Both teams are now 5-6. So it's like winner goes to a crappy bowl, loser's out. Just a kind of a pathetic chapter in that rivalry. But Florida State was rebuilding. If anything, if they get to a bowl, that's a win for Mike Norvell in year two. For Dan Mullen to go from, what were they? I think they were ranked as high as 6th in the country last year before they lost to LSU.
They were ranked in the top 10 in early October, and then they lose to Florida. They beat a horrible Vandy team. And then this is where I think it went. They got whipped at LSU by half a team.
That was the beginning of the end.
They were a double-digit favorite. They could not stop LSU. By the way, LSU couldn't run the ball at that point. And then all of a sudden, LSU looked like – they didn't look like a great team, but they whipped them. And then they get thumped by Georgia, which is expected. And then they get blown out at South Carolina, barely beat Samford, and then obviously lose in overtime to Mizzou. Dan Mullen lost 9 of his last 11 games against Power 5 opponents. Even more crazy, 5 of those teams were unranked, right? So Alan Taylor and I worked on that story, which I feel like I've tweeted out probably more than anything I've ever written. Maybe not, that's not true, but like in part because after the story came out, it like lived up to it as much, where all the issues that other SEC coaches talked about, soft, undisciplined, unfocused, the recruiting had really tailed off. And then it was like Dan Mullen's excuse making. One of the coaches said that was a poor, vibe inside the team, a lack of accountability starting at the top. All those things became even more apparent on the field after that LSU game. They lose to Georgia, then they get embarrassed by South Carolina. It's just the program literally fell apart. Maybe not literally, literally is too short. The program fell apart right there. And I don't think anybody in college football or in the state of Florida would have told you back in early October, Dan Mullen, of the big three in programs, the first guy fired would be the guy at Florida, not the guy at Florida State, not Manny Diaz, Dan Mullen.
When it just completely fell apart. And I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, maybe in another era of college football, they'd say, well, in fact, actually this did happen with Will Muschamp. Remember they won 12 games and they went to the Sugar Bowl and lost to Teddy Bridgewater. And the next year they went 4-8 and lost to Georgia Southern, right? When they were still a FCS team. And he came back, he got fired the next year, but it was kind of maybe that was just one bad year sentiment. You don't get that one bad year now, especially not when everything else is going wrong too. I mean, it's just been apparent for some time that he can't recruit at a level you need to recruit to win national championships, which is what the standard is for Florida football. Kirby Smart recruits at that level. Dan Mullen does not. So this raises the obvious question. And in a market where LSU and USC are already open, who would you peg as the possible next coach of the Florida Gators?
Off the top of my head, I don't know if you can get Dan Quinn to come back to Gainesville. I think Billy Napier, to me, if I was Scott Strickland, I would look really hard at Billy Napier. I feel like there's some good options, but there are not enough good coaches to fill. You mentioned USC and LSU. There's also Virginia Tech out there. That's a really good job.
They're not going to beat out Florida for a coach, I don't think.
You would not think. I don't know. Man, like, the thing with Florida is interesting in that somewhere Dan Mullen kind of fit in the category between, all right, Urban Meyer obviously was a Grand Slam coach. He won multiple national titles. Did not work out for Ron Zook, who obviously was a good recruiter. Did not work out for him. Did not work out for Will Muschamp. Jim McElwain had some good moments, won the SEC East, but then it just completely imploded. You know, it imploded for Dan Mullen. And again, I bring up the Muschamp part because, like, Dan Lanning is a really well thought of defensive coordinator at Georgia. I don't know if Florida, I mean, it shouldn't be that, like, oh, well, it didn't work out with the Muschamp, so we can never hire a first time defensive guy as a head coach at this level, you know. But I don't know what, you know,
I think it's too big a job to hire a coordinator. And frankly, I mean, you know, you said Billy Napier. I agree. He'd be a really good hire. And I wonder if even he wouldn't satisfy the fan base. I don't know what huge name they're expecting. Put it this way.
Would you go after Matt Campbell?
That doesn't seem like a good fit. Maybe I'm wrong, but would you go after Luke Fickell?
Well, yeah, I would go after Luke Fickell. I mean, I don't know if he'd be more inclined to go to Gainesville than he would to – You know, if I was, here's the thing. And I wondered about this a little bit from the Scott Woodward, the AD at LSU side. You know, it's like, okay, if you can't get Jimbo Fisher, probably you can't get Lincoln Riley. I would go after Luke Fickell if I was him. I mean, if I'm Luke Fickell, would I be more inclined to go to LSU or Florida?
I think the sentiment in Cincinnati, since I was just there on Friday, is that the jobs they would worry about losing him to if they ever came open are Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Penn State.
Right.
I don't know that Florida or LSU has ever even crossed anybody's minds. So there's no way to know whether he would be interested or not. They could certainly throw a lot of money at him. But he's also in a position where he can be choosy. I know this, and look, we haven't even talked about the Mel Tucker, you know, I don't think it's a done deal, but the reported $95 million contract that Michigan State is supposedly working on for him with the benefit of two donors. If he's off the market, there's no way LSU, USC, and Florida are all going to hire coaches that their fans think that was a great hire. There aren't three guys. We can't name three guys. Bob Stoops, I don't think is going back into coaching. I know we speculated early in the season that Urban Meyer might come running back. I don't know how real. There are not three names that those three fan bases would be like, that guy is a home run hire for our school. Do you agree?
I would absolutely agree. I don't know. You know, and right now, Florida's recruiting was kind of in the toilet by SEC standards anyway. Now here we are. It's basically Thanksgiving weekend. The early signing period is not far off. You're going to start a coaching search. I don't know what they do. I mean, I really, you know, LSU has had a couple of, you know, and he's been working on that coaching search long before he fired Ed Ogeron. So I don't know what Florida does to jump into the middle of this right now. Here's one candidate I think would be interesting, and I feel bad just throwing it out there for Kentucky fans, but like Mark Stoops is a really good coach. He's done a really good job in the SEC. He knows how to recruit. His teams play hard. They're physical. He can develop players. Mark Stoops should be getting calls by a lot of places. He should be getting called by USC. He probably should be getting called by Scott Woodward at this point. And I would think he should be definitely getting called by Scott Strickland. I'm not saying he should leave, you know, but I think he should be on people's radar. I mean, he's a good coach.
He would make, I think of the three, yeah, I think Florida would make the most sense for him, having coached in that state quite a bit. Do you leave Kentucky, where he is a hero for going 9-3, to Florida, where you can get fired 1 year after going 9-3?
That's the $12 million question.
When you were listing off like Zook and Musch, I was just, it's staggering how many coaches they've gone through, given that they had Steve Spurrier for, I think, 12 years, right? As stable as it comes. I don't even remember how many years Urban ended up there, but he delivered them two national championships. And then every other guy has been crash and burn. Some of them, you didn't have high hopes. You know, I didn't necessarily have high expectations for Zook, who I honestly had never heard of the day that he was announced. That was a long time ago. I didn't know if Jim McElwain would make it or not, but I really did think Dan Mullen would do well there. Both of us had a lot of respect for what he did at Mississippi State. He had the history of Florida working there for Urban Meyer, just couldn't recruit, which you got to be able to do at a job like that.
And you got to recruit at a super high level. Look, Dan Mullen was able to compete with Hugh Freeze for a couple of big time guys, you know, in the state of Mississippi. Obviously, Jeffrey Simmons was one, Chris Jones. I mean, I'm sure there was others, you know, that they got there, but just consistently to get top 100 players, he just couldn't close. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's like the Clay Helton thing where you talk to people and they're like, yeah, the head coach needs to be a lot more of a factor on it. And that just did not get it done. I mean,
well, firing your coach is the easy part. Hiring a new one is the hard part. And what a market, you know. You mentioned Virginia Tech, Washington, I think, is a pretty good job. You know, we think possibly ASU will come open. That's probably more of a West Coast centric job.
One thing I think might happen, I think the Washington State job, I think they may have found their head coach in Jake Dickert, the interim.
Interesting.
He's the acting head coach. He's done a really good job there. I know they have been impressed with him. I'm not going to report it that it's a done deal. I think the more time passes, it's like, yeah, maybe we should keep this guy.
You know, Washington State, it didn't even occur to me until Oregon lost last night that this was a possibility. There is still a scenario where Washington State goes to the Pac-12 title game. They're 6-5, but they go to the Pac-12 title game if they beat Washington and Oregon loses to Oregon State. That would be a very Pac-12 thing to have a 7-5 team that fired its coach halfway through the season due to a COVID vaccine mandate playing for the conference championship.
Wouldn't it be, though? Yeah.
I think on Wednesday's show, which is right before Thanksgiving, and usually all hell breaks loose in the coaching market the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So I think on Wednesday's show, we might go school by school in terms of schools that either have openings or we think will have openings, and check in and see where we think they are on the coaching carousel. You should also send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. I suppose we may also have to react to if there's some unexpected development in the playoff rankings Tuesday night. I'm sure Gary Barter will say something that will, you know, infuriate you, Bruce, and we'll have to acknowledge that on Wednesday morning. So there'll be a lot to get. It's that time of year. This is when it all converges. There will be a lot to talk about this week. And certainly as we get into Ohio State, Michigan, and Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and some other big games next weekend. We'll see you next time.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.